Welcome to the midweek Mission Ridge podcast known as Footnotes. Footnotes is here to give you some of the stuff that we didn't have time to cover in the sermon and encourage you to dig in deeper as you study the text. So let's dive in and check out what's in the footnotes.
Well, welcome back to Footnotes. We had a lovely conversation right before this that we had to get focused on.
I'm going to tag it at the end. It's going to be great.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Anyway, I'm Paul Patterson, pastor at Mission Ridge Church. We have Logan Daly.
Yo.
Back in the corner. And we have Rob Coriel.
Hello.
Not in the corner.
Not in the corner. Anyway, so we're talking about James 2 this week. And we only had two discussions, so I think it'll be relatively quick. And I'm going to kind of flip the order of what we discussed before we recorded this. I kind of want to talk about chiasm a little bit more. Chiasm is going to be a thing that's going to come up a lot at Mission Ridge. It's just something that's all over the place, and because of the way we are and the way we preach and the way we approach Scripture, things like the literal structure,
Liturgical.
But I'm thinking literal, but that's also not the right word.
Literary
structure. There we go.
That was fun.
Woo! Woo! The literary structure of a book is incredibly important to its intent, its purpose, its meaning. And so we want to talk a little bit more about that. We're going to just briefly touch on it Sunday. And I kind of want to throw it to Rob because just right before we recorded this, he was looking up something in James 2. And I think it's a great example of what a chiasm looks like as far as a small chiasm. And I think we could talk more about how chiasm isn't just small, short things like me, although I'm not that small. Anyway, but it also covers entire books, and not just books, but even multiple books. So you were looking at something dealing with the law and transgression.
Yeah, so if you're looking at verses 8 through 12, you see the author, I talked about the royal law, and law as transgressors, and then there's a statement that whoever keeps the whole law and yet stumbles in one point, he has become guilty of all. And then you back out of the chiasm as you were, and it says transgressors of the law, so that matches up with point B, law as transgressors, and then law of liberty is how the author finishes this up. And so that matches up or has a similar thought type to the royal law. And through the structure, royal law as transgressors, guilty of all the law, transgressors of the law of liberty, there's something that Jacob or James is trying to communicate. And this is worth wrestling with as far as, you know, what is he really trying to say here?
Yeah. So the passage we're talking about from, if I'm right, James 2, 8 through 12?
12.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so if you recall, we'll talk about it a little bit this last Sunday, but also Logan introduced it too. A chiasm is, it can take two forms. It can be a mirror on itself, so it'll make point A, point B, point C, point D, and so on, and then it'll reverse and go backwards, so C, B, A, or it'll go A, B, C, and then start again at A and go B, C again. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason that this is so important is because we're talking about a time where, like, people don't have bold or italics. They don't have chapter marks necessarily. They can't format text the way we can format text today. And so one of the ways they formatted their points was by using things like chiasms, these little patterns, these little hints. But as this Jewish culture kept going, and as Scripture was written, chiasm isn't just about structuring; it's also about a way of pointing us towards something. So, your example here in James 2, 8 through 12 is a great example because it discusses the royal law in verse 8, and then in verse 12 it discusses the law of liberty. And so these are both really unique phrases that James uses And one of the questions we have to ask is, why does he change? Like, what's the difference between the royal law and the law of liberty?
Yeah, the royal law, I think, ties back to when Jesus was asked what the greatest commandment is, and he said, to love the Lord your God, and the second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. So that would be considered the royal law. The law of liberty seems to be pointing towards mercy, which is found in verse 13, for judgment will be merciless to the one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. And so it seems to be just the sense that law of liberty shows mercy.
Yeah, and I often wonder if James, one thing that we've mentioned before is James is just quoting scripture all over the place. We talked about Leviticus, we talked about Proverbs, but also James is quoting Jesus himself all over the place. And so I often wonder if James is quoting Jesus's quote-unquote new commandment to love one another as he loved us. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying, like he starts with the royal law and says, yeah, that's good. That's a kingly law. That's an incredibly important law. But there's an even higher law that we're called to love one another as Christ loved us, which means Christ forgave us. He sacrificed himself in order for that forgiveness to happen. And that's what he's calling us to. But so in the middle of this chiasm, you have the point that is made, whoever keeps the whole law but fails in one point becomes guilty of all of it. Now, and it's important to remember, you can't just isolate on this. You have to take the broader context of what's going on in James, and especially James 2 here. Like, James's point is not that if you just break one law, you've broken the entire law. That's not necessarily his point. His point is, he's been talking about partiality and how we play favorites. And he's also going to talk about here in a bit, when he talks about faith, about how we treat the poor and the people that are less advantageous than us. Like, how do we treat people who are struggling? And I'm convinced that one of his points here with verse 10 in the center of this chiasm is that if you fail to take care of one another, you have violated the entire Torah. Does that make sense?
I agree with that. And I also see in this is that we're all on equal ground. Mm. Doesn't matter what your failings are, Paul, or yours, Logan, or mine, all of us have failed. And so how is it that we're being partial towards one another when we're really in the same boat?
Yeah.
We all need mercy.
And if we choose mercy, if we choose to show mercy, that's more powerful than judgment ever can be.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
There's a book I've been meaning to read called Them. And I think it's written by a former politician. And it talks about why we hate other people. Huh. And in it, it talks about scapegoating. So obviously,
of course, you're...
I'm a fan.
Okay.
Anyway. But it talks about how our culture forms around this power of judgment and how to break free from it. And how if we break free from it, we can have a more healthy, more powerful life. And... James is going to talk a lot about this idea of how we judge one another and how we take advantage of one another and how we neglect or play favorites. And that is powerful. It can wreck people. It can wreck societies. It can wreck families. But if we choose mercy instead of judgment, if we choose to look at one another as actual people and to love one another, to be okay with our faults, that is even more powerful. Hmm. Which reminds me of something Paul says, I think in I want to say Romans. Yeah, I think it's Romans, where Paul talks about how the act of one man caused death to enter all of humanity, but how much more powerful then is the gift of one man to bring life to all of humanity. Like, if we choose forgiveness and love to sacrifice for one another, that's even more powerful. And it's hard to trust that, because so much of our society is built around the first idea of judgment and self-preservation, that it's hard to trust that story. But if we can trust in what God tells us, the promise is life and healing. Anything you guys want to add to that?
No, I think that was good. That was a good catch, Rob. Like that's a great example of a little chiasm popping up. Just a little tidbit in there.
Yeah, and generally speaking, whenever you see phrases repeated, like pay attention.
One of the things to remember is that the Hebrew language, which this would have been written in originally, it was a very simple language, and so one of the reasons for the repetition is to get to make a complex statement in a very simple language.
Sure.
Yeah, to say more by saying less.
Right.
Yeah. And there's chiasms throughout this book, just as there is in every book of the Bible. I'm looking at one right now in James 2, 17 through 26. In verse 17, it talks about how faith, if it doesn't have works, is dead. And then in verse 26, it says, so faith without works is dead. And so you have these two similar phrases at the beginning and the end of a chunk of scripture. And what hopefully we can train people to do is start to look for the connection points in between. Because like when you see these two similar phrases, like you should be looking for more patterns that show up. And of course, faith and works shows up over and over again. And if you were to map it out, right in the middle, it says, was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he had offered Isaac his son upon the altar? And James's point here is that faith sure is a belief, it's a trust, but at the same time, like, you can't have faith unless there's actual physical actions, unless there's something that shows that you actually have faith, that you're actually trusting someone or trusting something. Mm-hmm. And so this kind of leads us into the other thing that we want to elaborate a little bit more on is the James versus Paul controversy. In scholarship, there's been a long-standing debate that James is arguing with Paul. In fact, it was Martin Luther who wanted to throw out the book of James.
Yeah. The irony of us recording this the day after the 501st Reformation Day.
I didn't even think of that.
Martin Luther really did not like the book of James. He called it, hang on, I got the quote here somewhere. Let me find it, because it's a doozy. Where did it go?
Do, 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 do.
This is one of those times where I got way too many tabs open on my computer.
Well, I will keep talking
while you look at the quote. You keep going. I'm going to see if I can find it.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
All right. But needless to say, Martin Luther did not like it. One of the reasons Martin Luther did not like the book of James is because so much of his theology was so built upon the back of Paul. And Paul says things like in Romans 4... verses 1 and following, what then shall we say was gained by Abraham, our father, according to the flesh? For if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Now to the one who works, his wages are not counted as a gift, but as his due. And to the one who does not work, but believes in him who justifies the ungodly, his faith is counted as righteousness. And so one of the big arguments of Paul is that we're not saved through these special acts that we do, these unique things that we do, that really it's just a matter of this faithful relationship that we have with the God of the universe. And so you can imagine if Martin Luther, if this becomes like his, in many ways, the 99 theses really are coming back to this type of passage, that you can't earn your salvation, that you can't earn your acceptance into God's family.
Yeah.
It just comes because you trust in it, because you accept it in a faithful relationship. And so then you have James 2 that says, for example, faith without works is dead. Like you can't have faith unless you have works.
Yeah.
And it seems incredibly contrary. Did you ever find that?
I did. The Protestant reformer Martin Luther denied it was a work of an apostle. He did not think it was the work of an apostle, and termed it an epistle of straw,
as compared to some other books in the New Testament, partly because of the conflict he thought it raised with Paul on the doctrine of justification. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not written by an epistle or by an apostle, it is an epistle of straw, according to Martin Luther.
And I heard somewhere that he thought that the book of James should be thrown into the river.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Yeah. It was like, this is garbage. This is crap. He didn't like it at all.
No.
Get this out of here.
And I hope that now that Martin Luther is in heaven, hanging out with James, those two are having a drink, and James is going,
whichever James.
Whatever James it is. James is like, let me educate you a little bit.
Hang on. let me tell you what I meant.
Yeah.
Which I think is going to be all of our experience.
Oh, yeah.
Like, every one of us, when we get there, God's going to be like, hey, Rob.
Yeah.
Let me clue you in some things. Nice job, by the way. Good and faithful work.
Good and
faithful servant.
A for effort.
A for effort. but, yeah, I just think that's, like, I appreciate what Luther brings to the Reformation, what that's meant for the church. Sure.
Absolutely.
And our understanding of Paul and, yeah.
This is not to take anything away from Martin Luther. Like, we would not be sitting here recording this without, you know, the 99 smacked up against the door.
Right, people were trying to buy their forgiveness. And not only that, if you were rich, you could pay ahead of time for forgiveness for something you wanted to commit. Like, if you wanted to commit adultery, just go ahead and buy your adultery-free ticket.
Here's my get-out-of-hell-free card.
Yeah, like the abuses of the church at the time. And I think that also speaks to how important context is.
Yeah.
Like, James is talking to a group, you know, 1,400 years before Martin Luther comes around.
Yeah.
A completely different group, a Jewish group.
Yep.
That is going through a completely different situation and circumstance, that has a different language, that has a different cultural values. And
was Martin Luther reading it in the Greek?
Yes.
Okay, so
one of the key points to his...
He would have been reading it in the original...
Yeah.
The original language.
As far as what we have for manuscripts. Okay. There is an argument, Rob kind of referenced it earlier, there's an argument that James was written in Hebrew. I actually kind of disagree with that, because James is writing to the diaspora.
Yeah.
And the diaspora is the reason that we have the Septuagint, the Greek version of the Old Testament.
Yep.
But regardless, he's a Hebrew. He thinks like a Hebrew. He talks like a Hebrew. He writes like a Hebrew.
For sure. And I mean, and he's writing to Jews. He's a Jew writing to other Jews.
Yeah.
Now, the sure Jewish James, Christians, but...
I'm sure James, when you get there, will sit you down. And...
I'm sure. I am sure. this topic always reminds me of something C.S. Lewis said, and I can't remember what book it's in all of a sudden, but he talks about how there will be surprises when the last judgment happens. Like, the people that we thought would never make it,
Wait, they're here?
And then the people that we thought would make it, never do.
Wait, where is...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and where am I?
Like, I think that conversation right there is where we learn, like, oh, maybe we had that a little wonky.
Yeah. You know? Sure. Oh, and we've said even before we started this church that, like, how presumptuous is it of us to assume that 100% of our doctrines are correct? Like, we're not infallible. We're flawed. So how could we ever assume that everything we believe is correct? Which is why we have things like roughly right in our core values, because we're not perfect. And if we assume we are, then we can never change. We never want to change.
Totally makes sense. But
you don't like it still.
Oh, it's still difficult because you want to be right.
Sure.
Who wants to be wrong?
No one wants to be wrong. So James versus Paul.
Yeah.
So this controversy comes out of things like people like Martin Luther. Also just this, I mean, Paul is just over and over again, like, not just in Romans 4, but Rob's doing something.
On the board.
He's writing something.
Oh. No. James versus Paul, but Paul now has an E on it.
Like my pastor.
I have nothing against James, anyway.
I know.
Anyway.
Derailed.
Wow. What were we talking about?
James versus Paul.
That's right. Okay.
James versus Paul.
So this controversy comes. The controversy comes out of this like apparent contradiction between James's language and Paul's language. Like we read Romans 4, but you can't even think of like Ephesians 2, 8 mm-hmm. through 10, where Paul says like we're saved by grace through faith, not through our works.
Yep.
And then James says you can't have faith without works. In fact, he goes as far to say in James 2, he says, show me your faith apart from your work. No, that's not the one I wanted.
That faith apart from works is useless, down in James 20.
Yeah, well, verse 14. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Oh. Can that faith save him?
Sure.
Like, and that's a rhetorical question, and the assumption is no. No, it can't. Like, if you don't have works, you can't be saved? That seems to be flying in the face of Paul.
Yeah. It definitely feels like that on the surface.
Yeah. And so this gets into, so the discussion that we have to have is what's the broader context around this? Like, what is the, how is Paul approaching the conversation and how is James approaching the conversation? Sure. And I think I think one great place to start is by looking at the Gospels, because it's very clear that Jesus offers salvation, forgiveness freely if you just trust him, if you just believe him. But then he also says things like in Matthew 25 that, when it comes to the day of judgment, he's going to look at how we treated one another.
Yeah.
Did you give water to the thirsty? Did you clothe the naked? Did you house the homeless? Mm-hmm. And if you did, then you are considered one of the sheep that's going to be entered in. That's going to enter into his fold. If you didn't, then you're going to be one of the goats that's going to be cast out into outer darkness forever. Sure. Like Jesus seems to be okay with this controversy and in many ways this paradox. At least for us Westerners, it seems like a paradox.
Sure. Well, and they're talking there. I think there's an important thing to be stated here that when Paul is talking about works, he's talking about the law that makes you Jewish. He's talking about the when he says works, he's meaning obedience to the Jewish law, the Mitzvot Maaseh HaTorah.
Say it right? One more time for everyone.
Mitzvot Maaseh HaTorah.
We'll make sure I have Marty.
Might get that. I think I got that one right. I think okay. I got that one nailed down. But he's meaning the works of the law, which means doing the law. What makes you Jewish? This is talking about kosher law. This is talking about not wearing mixed cloth. This is wearing tassels, circumcision.
Yep.
Everything that makes you actually Jewish. This is what Paul is talking about when he's talking about works to the Gentiles. When James talks about works here, he's just talking about obedience.
Sure.
Because he's talking to Jews. The Jews are already following it. Of course.
There are things going on in Logan's living room.
Josh just crawled through my living room and hugged his father and Paul, and I managed to keep a straight face until he crawled under our whiteboard. It was magnificent.
By the way, we just got offices, but they're working on it right now, trying to get ready for us. So.
It'd be more distracting in there because they're banging with hammers and all sorts of crap. So anyway. Yeah, that one. No, we remember James. When James is talking about works, he's talking about obedience to the greater law. This is obedience to God.
Sure.
This is the acting out of and caring for your neighbor and that sort of thing. There's a subtle difference there, because James is already assuming that the Jews are following the Jewish law.
Yeah, I mean, good
Jews.
And the thing that we have to remember is the vast majority of the early church was Jewish.
Yeah, and they're dealing with Gentiles.
Sure.
I touched on this last week that, you know, and Paul talks about this all the time of how do you deal with these Gentiles? Like, do they need to become Jewish?
Yeah.
And
that's, in many ways, that's the number one controversy of the entire New Testament.
Sure. Like, do we need to circumcise these people and do they have to quit eating bacon? Like, this is, that's a big conversation.
And polyester. Don't forget polyester.
Yeah, no polyester. less of an issue as it is now for Jews, probably.
Sure, but that's also because it's 2,000 years removed.
Yeah, they probably didn't have too many polyester things running around.
Yeah, well, but at the same time, like, we don't think, oh, you're talking about polyester. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I think pantsuits have been coming back that many times over 2,000 years.
Oh, my gosh.
anyway. trying to get back on track here. And so there's this controversy that's going on, and one of the things that's important to remember, as you just touched on, is that these two different phrases, like Paul's dealing with a Gentile Jewish church.
Yep.
It's a Jewish church that has a bunch of Gentile people. And one of the things that we read about at the end of the book of Acts, in fact, I'm going to pull this up because it's... this is, for many Christians, this kind of blows their mind. Like, we think of the Old Testament or the law as being bad, and that it's somehow abolished, that is no longer something that we are held account to.
Yeah.
And at the end of the book of Acts, it's not right at the end. When Paul's going back to Jerusalem, and this is where he's going to be arrested, and which is ultimately going to lead to him being trucked off to Rome. But on his way back, he meets with the apostles that are there, and he shares a report about everything that has done that has been going on with the church and how Gentiles are coming to the Lord, and the apostles celebrate everything that God is doing amongst the Gentiles, mm-hmm. and it's great. And Paul. Wow, my computer fan is really loud.
Yeah. It's working hard.
I don't realize how far back this is. Did I skip it?
I don't know.
I might have skipped it. I did skip it. Darn it. Anyway, you can look it up by yourself. But he celebrates with the apostles and the elders that are in Jerusalem, and they celebrate everything that's going on, and then they say, hey, basically the Jewish Christians of our area have heard this rumor that you are teaching people that they don't have to uphold the law.
Yep.
That you don't have to do that. So, to prove to them that they're wrong, shave your head, take an oath, and pay for the sacrifices of these other men who are going to do the same with you, and go to the temple. And Paul does it.
Sure.
Like, he's trying to prove that is not what he's actually preaching. What he's preaching is that the Gentiles are now part of God's faithful community,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have to be subject to specifically the Mosaic law.
Yeah. This is an argument that had been going on before Christ even.
Yeah.
This is Shammai versus Hillel.
And who are those guys?
So Shammai and Hillel were rabbis back around that time. I think Shammai came... Shammai came after Hillel. They weren't alive at the exact same time. They almost overlapped, if I remember correctly, or something close to that. So Hillel believed that you were righteous when you believed. Think of Abraham in Genesis 15. And that following the works of the law, the mitzvot ma'aseh hatorah, the Jewish bit, was not required by God to be justified. So aka what he believed, that the Gentiles, you didn't have to convert to be a Jew in order to be justified by God. But Shammai came along, and he believed that you were justified by carrying out these parts of the law. So you've got the kind of three parts of the law, you could think of it. You've got the cultic, the ethical, and then the Jewish mitzvot ma'aseh hatorah. And he believed that you had to carry out all three parts. You had to carry out the Jewish part to be justified also. So the Gentiles had to become Jewish to do that. And this is a conversation that then carried over into the Christian church.
Yeah.
Which is where we find, you know, this is Paul talking about it and coming back and them having a discussion in Jerusalem about this. You know, what are you preaching to the Gentiles here?
Yep.
You know, where are you falling on this?
By the way, that's Acts 21.
There you go. Acts 21. And then it seems on the surface level that James is kind of taking the side of Shammai, if you will. And the Jews that he's writing to probably would have been in a pretty heavy Shammai area. That kind of down on the southern side of things versus the Gentile churches, or the heavy Gentile churches, which would have been up in towards the north.
And throughout Galatia.
Yeah. It seems that James is taking Shammai's position, but really he's using Shammai's language to present Hillel concepts.
Yeah.
which I think is an important thing here, that really James and Paul are falling on the same page. They're just coming at it from two different angles because of who they're talking to. Paul's talking to the Gentiles, and so he needs to come at it from an angle that they're going to understand. James is coming at it from an angle that the Jews are then going to understand. And he's also encouraging the Jews throughout the whole book that, you know, no, you still keep upholding your Jewish tradition, like, still do this, but don't worry about, like, don't let the Gentiles coming in tear down your Jewish tradition. Keep carrying out that. Yeah, sure.
Sure.
But that's not, he's not saying that that's what saves you.
Yeah. Well, I think if you think about Paul, if you just look at all of Paul's writings and remember the context of the main issues dealing with, how does a Jewish and a Gentile community get together? Like, are they both of the same community? Are they both of the same faith? And he's over and over again trying to argue about this. He goes as far in Galatians. I'm sure we'll cover that one day, but he basically says, if you think you're saved by faith, sorry, if you think you're saved through your circumcision, just cut the whole thing off. We translate that a little bit down, make it a PG.
Such version. A shame.
Right? Like he that's what he's arguing against. Like, you don't have to do these, I was going to call it surface level, and I feel like that's unfair. That's no, the Jews were called to a covenant with God that included these commands, but that isn't what determines if they were quote-unquote saved or not.
Yeah.
And Paul's trying to deal with, like, no, the Gentiles can still be part of God's family.
Yeah.
They're grafted in. They're on a separate branch in many ways. Yeah, but
they're under the cultic and the ethical, but they're not under this covenant that's going to... That's supposed. The Jews are supposed to look different from the world to be an emblem, a symbol, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But so Paul will go back and argue against the possible misinterpretation of what he is saying when you are saved by faith, not through works. And he'll say things like in Romans, should we go on sinning more so therefore grace may abound more? And he says things. By no means, like big old exclamation point, like absolutely not. Yeah. He says in Romans 2, the same book that, you know, was kind of the calling card of the the Reformation movement. He says in Romans 2 that God will repay everyone according to their deeds. Like, even for him, like, your deeds, your works are important, but the quote works of the law, what you're talking about, the those.
That's not even roughly right.
No, I've tried to say that. I try to remember it. Just rough. I can never say it right.
Just rough. That was rough.
And better than I could say.
Anyway.
Still rough.
But effort. Paul's primary concern is these works of the law. Like, you don't... Like, if you're a Jew, you're still called to those. Like, you were still under that Mosaic covenant.
Yeah, you're still Jewish. You still need to carry that out because you're still supposed to look different.
Sure.
Yeah.
But as a Gentile, you weren't called to be under that covenant.
Yeah. Different type. It's a different type of freedom under Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But at the same time, Paul says in Galatians to, like, Peter that, like, hey, if you don't want to live under that covenant, fine. Don't be hypocritical about it.
Yeah.
Other people have that choice too.
Sure.
Because Peter starts eating with the Gentiles, and there's this kind of insinuation that he might be eating their food. And then when Jewish Christians show up, Peter backs off and pretends like he has nothing to do with them, and Paul calls him out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, be faithful to what you want to choose to be faithful to when it comes to your relationship with God. But, like, anyway. So from Paul's side, he's dealing with the Jewish side of things. Like, you don't have to be a Jew to be part of God's family. Like, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see from Acts 21 that there's this report that starts circulating, and that Paul's teaching this completely opposite thing than what the Jews think. And so then James writes his, this is at least how I see it in my brain, James writes his epistle saying, no, that's not the case. Like, this misinterpretation you have of Paul is not correct. I view both James and Paul as complementing one another.
Yeah.
Like, they're both true. Like, just because you don't have to do the works of the law does not mean that works are not part of your faith. And if you have no works, your faith is useless.
Yeah, and one way I could picture this is describing two sides of a coin. If one author describes one side of the coin, the other author describes the other side of the coin, this can sound contradictory. Are they talking about the same coin?
Sure. It's that they're us Westerners, and I'm a proud Greek Westerner. Like, mm-hmm. I have no shame about it, but we do love our black and white truths.
Oh yeah.
We struggle with paradoxes and contradictions, and in many ways, the Bible is an Eastern book, and it kind of embraces paradox and contradictions.
It's a little wibbly wobbly.
Sure, and that's if you think about your life and how the world works, that is the way. Even on a little bit of science nerdery, like the basic understanding of how the entire universe works, there's a huge contradiction between quantum mechanics and the theory of relativity. Like, we understand how the big stuff works, we kind of understand how the small stuff works, but they don't work together. They contradict one another. Mm-hmm. And they're both true, and that's okay.
Well, think of light, you know.
Sure. Is it a wave or a particle?
Is it a wave or a particle? Yes.
Wait, how is it both?
Rob's waving.
I'm waving at the light.
Oh, okay. And he's a particle. Anyway, but like...
Particle, prodigal, what?
Yeah, particle, ooh. Anyway, but like the first time we ever started work, like really kind of understanding the way light works is just through the double split experiment. The double slit
experiment.
There you go. The nature of reality itself is fine with contradictions and paradoxes. And so it makes sense that the creator of nature, when he writes a book, would intentionally mess with our brains because maybe he's trying to teach us more. So anyway, but is James saying that you are saved by your works? Kind of. Is Paul saying that you're saved by your faith, not your works? Kind of. You can't have faith without actually having some type of physical change in your life. You can't have a healthy, good marriage relationship without it having some type of change that happens. You have to talk with your wife or your husband. You have to show up for dinner. You have to, you know, try to remember the anniversaries, which...
Is that required?
I try.
Effort.
Okay. But no, you can't...
Sorry, Molly.
You can't... Love you, babe. you can't accidentally have a relationship with someone. Like, it takes effort. It takes work.
It doesn't just accidentally happen?
No, maybe that's your issue.
Oh, man. I've been doing it wrong all these years.
But it takes it takes action. And I think oftentimes we approach faith with this idea of faith means belief, and that's not what faith means. Mm-hmm. It means faithfulness. It means that you tie yourself to something, that you live by this.
Yeah.
And if I were to say that I'm a diehard Democrat but I always vote Republican, people would have issue with that. Like, it doesn't make sense. So if I say I'm a diehard environmentalist but I never recycle.
You drive a Hummer.
And I drive a Hummer and...
burn tires in your front yard.
And shoot all the animals. Like, obviously there's a contradiction. Like, my faith does not match with my works. Like, what do you tie yourself to? How are you faithful to your belief system? And as you said, James and Paul are describing both sides of the same coin. Like,
do you just talk the talk or do you walk the walk?
Yeah. So cliche.
Oh, it is. But it applies. It applies. There's a bunch of cliches that are going to apply through this whole book.
True. And so is there an argument that James and Paul are having here? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Okay, as a parent, how many times do I say something to my kids and they take it and they run to the complete opposite end of the spectrum? And then I have to be like, no, that's not what that meant. Like, all the freaking time. And my oldest child's 8. I'm sure you have even more examples with older children.
Oh.
You don't need to share an example. But
so, yeah, no. I'll say that. That's a different podcast.
But even like in my marriage, how many times do I say something or my wife says something and then we completely run way too far with it. And we have to go like, no, that's not what I meant at all. Like,
you've blown this out of proportion.
you've taken it out of context. Nope. And I don't know. That's how I often view the James Paul controversy. Like,
yeah,
it's not a controversy. Like, people were reading Paul or hearing what Paul was teaching, and they were like, "Sweet, we can do whatever we want." And James is like, idiots. no, you can't. No, you can't. Well, once again, look at Paul. Like, you're justified by your faith, not through your works. And then the rest of his epistles, like, he's like, you idiots, why are you doing what you're doing? Like, stop it. Or, you know, start doing this. Like,
yeah.
Like, he's frequently addressing, quote unquote, their works, the things that they're doing or they're not doing. Like, he's trying to smack them across the face with a 2x4.
It'd almost be better if we had a clean, a different word than work.
True.
To describe between, because there's the ethical, ooh, like moral, like,
yeah.
There's the ethical moral work, and then there's the Jewish, you know, like, you know, putting on your Sunday clothes work.
Sure.
And one of them makes you Jewish, and then the other one makes you, you know, the other one comes out because you have faith in God.
Yeah.
I
think so the New Testament uses some like catchphrases for this. So you have works, you have deeds,
mm-hmm,
you have good deeds. Like over and over again, Jesus uses the word good deeds. Paul uses the word good deeds all the time.
Yeah.
It's and the good deeds are the just your the good things you do in your day-to-day life. Like, and it's not just single things, it's the collection of deeds that you are doing. Are they, sure, good or not? But then you have what Paul uses, the works of the law, and that's a very specific phrase.
Yeah.
But we don't have that today, especially within the evangelical Christian church. Like, we don't.
Well, and we have to interpret those phrases the way it was originally intended to be interpreted. And it's like if someone reads one of our books, you know, from 2,000 years from now, and it says that Paul was a righteous dude.
No, it wasn't.
You know, is that, now,
no, that even that phrase is old. Like,
right, like that's
righteous.
Like,
mm-hmm.
10-year-old phrase, but you know, I was just trying to think of what.
Yeah.
Or I was hitting the Rob calendar, yeah, not the Paul calendar. You know.
Or you know, other phrase like lit or. Even stoked, like I'm so stoked. Like, what does that mean?
Use that all the time. It's like fire.
Sure, but like, you know, it has these specific contexts. It has these meanings that build up over it. What's the other one? Woke. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that. Yeah, that one's
get woke. Like, what does that mean? Like, just wake up.
I don't know.
Is that what you mean? Like, apparently, even Logan's too old to know what that means.
I'm just not woke.
But every culture, every society has its own euphemisms, its own way it uses language. And it's important to remember and try to find out how they use these things. I've said that one of the most important things when it comes to studying your Bible is to observe, and then later interpret. Like, you know, gather as much information as you can, not just about the text, but about the culture, about the society, about what was going on at that time, because all of that plays into what they're writing. And you have to, like, you cannot understand scripture fully unless you understand all that. So,
for sure.
Any things we want to throw into this?
You know, I'm excited because I'm preaching in 2 weeks, and I'm excited to kind of connect chapter 2 to chapter 4, knowing that James did that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
man, I wish we had more time in the sermons to show how James connects to itself, just because there's just so much interconnectivity. But yeah.
Well, James, and I think 4. I think we'll be able to touch on that more, probably coming off on the backside, because we'll be like, remember when we talked about this in chapter 2?
Sure.
Oh yeah, here it is again. Remember when we talked about this in chapter 1?
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that this week. Yeah. Know. Yeah, we remember these two verses from chapter 1.
Sure.
This entire chapter is about that.
Yep.
That's important. All right. So, all right.
It's exciting.
We good?
Yeah.
Oh, we're good. All right. Hopefully this wasn't a complete waste of your time. If it was,
I don't know, any time spent with you, me, and Rob, that's a good time right there.
And your Deadpool mug.
And my Deadpool mug. Maximum effort, baby.
All right. Well, with that unholy note, we're going to call this podcast a...
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Keep digging into the text.
You've been listening to Footnotes on the Mission Ridge podcast. For more information about Mission Ridge, please visit our website at missionridge.church.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope the rest of your week is straight up hashtag blessed, and that you'll join us again next week for more footnotes.